Jody Jenkins, the golf guy, all part of the Golf Radio Network, and we welcome you back. We are doing a Masters Fallout special, and we will discuss some other topics of interest in the world of golf coming up shortly. Our guest joining us from Jupiter, Florida, is Lauren Rubenstein. He's a VIP friend of the program, and Lauren, as always, we are still waiting. I should say I am still waiting for my column in the Globe and Mail, and I know it's coming. I know you're just teasing me.
Well, why don't you do something like going out on the golf course and, you know, one-upping Sergio and spitting all around the golf course.
Yeah.
Maybe doing something like that, or spitting on the show. Just say, excuse me, I've got to spit now because I can't stand what my guest just said.
Mike Weir, Stephen Ames, this past week at Augusta. Mike Weir had his ups and downs. There was flashes of brilliance, and then it seemed that he just kind of lost it for a little bit. Stephen Ames, not really a factor at all, in my opinion.
Well, I think it was a good example of, you know, what where Weir is at right now with his game. As you said, there were flashes of brilliance. His last round, 71, was a real solid round of ball control. So was his round Friday when he shot 72 in fairly difficult conditions. But then on Saturday, when the conditions really were the roughest, you know, he made some mistakes, and he was off, and he shot 80 and put himself out of the tournament when he had a chance, even with a 75, to still be in it. So I think you saw a guy who's still kind of getting closer to making his changes natural, but who is still struggling as well in some ways.
Lauren Rubenstein, our guest on the program. Of course, you can catch Lauren in his column in the Globe and Mail. And was it interesting, though, Lauren, sticking with the Canadians? I know I just find it interesting. Mike Weir wins the green jacket a couple years ago. He still does not get the attention that most other Masters champions. There was a lot of little intros and promos where Mike was not even featured. Is that to be expected just because he's a Canadian? Or?
Yeah, he's always not just because he's a Canadian, but for some reason, you know, he's a quiet guy. He's just under the radar. He hasn't done much, you know, to be fair, in the last couple of years to attract people's attention. And, you know, those of us who follow him closely, you know, we think he's doing okay, and we think he's coming on to playing some, you know, we pay every attention, so much attention to every shot. But really, on the Golf Channel or other people who are following the game, you know, he's just another guy who won the Masters. You know, if he were American, he would just be another guy who won the Masters, one of many. But in Canada, he's the guy, so we pay so close attention to him. And down in the U.S., you know, when he shot 75-72 the first two rounds and he was in it, I think he could have gotten a little bit more mention. I mentioned it to one of the guys on the Golf Channel. I mean, they don't put him up as a notable anymore, that sort of a thing. Occasionally they do. Sometimes, I shouldn't say that. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But he's certainly not part of the discussion right now in terms of one of the top players. And he's going to, you know, really need to move up in the world rankings or win again to be in that conversation.
Let's talk about the golf course itself. Obviously, it's certainly brought a lot of players to their knees. What kind of impact will this have on the majors coming up later in the season, especially the U.S. Open? Is this what we can expect? And do you think, did it bother you, the difficulty of the course?
The only thing that bothered me was maybe, you know, with some of the par fives, which particularly 15, where they lengthened 30 yards and made it, unless, you know, the fairway there is so severe, it's, you know, you used to be able to, you know, drive it down there to where you could hit a longer iron in there, 4-iron, 5-iron maybe. And I think the green itself is so tough, and you got the water in front, that hitting a 4 or 5-iron in there as a reward from a great drive is okay, because it's still a tough shot in. But now where they're driving it, except for guys like Tiger and Goosen maybe, but even they, I mean, can't get past the top of the hill. So they're standing up there with, you know, 210, 220, 230 yards into that green, and it being so firm and with the wind the way it was for most of the tournament, it made it almost an impossible shot there. So you saw very few eagles. I mean, once they put some water to the course on Sunday, there were a few more. But I think in the first few days, it was, you know, kind of took the gamble out of it entirely, and everybody had to play it the Zach Johnson way. Or if they did go for it, they could post some big numbers.
So does this set the tone for majors for the rest of the year?
Well, the U.S. Open has always wanted firm and fast conditions. They haven't gotten it. I mean, we certainly know that the U.S. Open and the PGA, they want narrow fairways and high rough. At Oakmont, they have taken out, like, thousands of trees at Oakmont. It's going to play as much. If they get firm and fast conditions, if they get a wind, it'll be hot in June, of course, in Pittsburgh. But if they get no rain, if it's dry, that course is really going to play tough, because they got really, really deep bunkers at Oakmont. Greens are fairly small in a lot of places. And, I mean, that course, you know, if we thought Augusta was tough, that could really, really be tough. And the British Open at Carnoustie, which we know is the toughest of the British Open rotation courses, in 99 when Vanderbilt had his big foul-up there and Paul Laurie went on to win, well, that course in the first round particularly, I mean, 80 was a good score. Sergio Garcia shot 86 or 87. He was just a teenager, came off, and he was crying. Mike Weir shot 81 or 82 the first round. So, you know, I think we're in for, you know, these are, and Weir and Ames were talking about that at Augusta. I mean, it's going to be a quartet of really tough courses this year if the conditions are right.
Lorne Rubenstein, columnist for the Globe and Mail and a golf guru extraordinaire, joining us on the program. And Lorne, I want to get your take actually on the PGA seems to be doing a lot of international stuff. They recently announced Puerto Rico being added to the 2008 schedule for the PGA Tour. Are we going to see more of this? Is this what are they trying to do here, just attract new audiences?
Well, we'll have to see. They brought Ty Votaw in, and Votaw is a former commissioner of the LPGA Tour. They put him in charge of their international business affairs, something like that. And Votaw's a shrewd guy. He's a lawyer. And that indicates to me that they want to move more and more in the direction of international, you know, international events to some degree, but more international marketing and television and opportunities around the world. So I think if you really look far down the road as countries like, you know, continents, you know, I mean, if you get China and, you know, India, a country, you know, where there's so many people, and if they start getting more, you know, more golfers out here, then, you know, you might see them getting into business opportunities in those countries. And I expect that to happen, in fact, down the road.
Is that good or bad?
I think golf's a world game. You know, I've always thought, maybe because I'm Canadian, you know, I'm not so narrowly focused on America being the kind of heart, you know, the heartland of the world. I think golf is an international game, and I don't mind at all. I mean, I would love to see a world tour of 20 to 25 events where they really did legitimately play around the world and the top 80 players or so, the kind of thing Greg Norman advocated years ago, and then I wouldn't mind seeing a second-tier tour in the United States. Of course, that's not going to happen. The PGA Tour is always going to, in the foreseeable future, always going to be the strongest tour with some international events. But even now, those World Golf Championship events, they're being played mostly in the U.S. They're called World Golf Championship events, but they're just about all in the U.S. the next few years.
Lorne Rubenstein, our guest, and we're going to take another commercial break. And when we return, Lorne's final thoughts on some other golf issues, and we'll get his predictions on the Verizon on the PGA Tour. It's all coming up. Jody Jenkins, the Golf Guy, on the Golf Radio Network.
Check out The Golf Guy online, jjthegolfguy.com.
Take a listen to this line from MicroAge President Tom Fleming. When you deal with MicroAge, we take all the worry and problems out of your computer systems. Isn't that a relief? I mean, let's be honest. Sometimes dealing with computers can be frustrating work, but not when you put it in the hands of MicroAge. They cover it all, from computer sales to IT consulting, right through to project management. Their approach is to deal with you and meet your exact needs. They want you to succeed, and they will use their energy and talent to make sure you get there. MicroAge has been in business since 1984, specializing in bringing IT solutions to the business community with the best and accredited professionals in the region. MicroAge in Belleville and Kingston. Computer solutions have never been so clear.
Pinnacle Music Studios is Southeastern Ontario's authorized Yamaha piano dealer. We carry the finest crafted instruments from digital pianos to the world-renowned Yamaha grand pianos. So whether you're a concert-level artist needing a large grand piano or a beginner just starting out, we have a Yamaha instrument to meet your needs and your budget. With over a century of piano manufacturing experience and innovation, Yamaha pianos are the premier choice of concert venues, music schools, professional musicians, and music enthusiasts around the world. Play a Yamaha today at Pinnacle Music Studios, downtown Belleville.
Brent has a hard time with anything that isn't sports.
What's the score? I can't tell who's winning.
Brent, it's Shakespeare in the Park. Nobody wins.
You got that right.
That's why Brent likes it at Boston Pizza, because he can relax, watch whatever game, and always get exactly what's going on, unlike some other places.
Offside! Totally offside!
The word is objection, Mr. Hawes.
Right, objection. What'd I say?
Boston Pizza. You're among friends.